Yeah, thank you very much, Luca. First of all, I of course want to thank the organizers, Luca and Celine, for putting together this conference. It's been really a very nice week. And also on a more personal note, I want to thank you for helping to navigate all these problems that happen these days when you go to conferences. So thank you very much for that. And of course, also thank you to PI for providing the venue for this great conference. It's an amazing place, and it's my first time here. I'm very happy to be here. So all of us are, I guess, a bit exhausted after this week of hearing these nice talks. So I'm talking about something very basic. There will be a bit of group theory and very elementary geometry. This is based on this work together with the Edinburgh crew, Jose, Emil, and Stefan. And then maybe the last 5-10 minutes, I'll also talk about some work in progress together with Stefan. Okay, so I guess all of us here in this room, since we went to this conference called that has quantum gravity in the title, all of us are interested in getting a theory of quantum gravity. And it seems that the best way to do this, that we have now the best tool to understanding quantum gravity, appears to be the holographic principle. Now, still, also the holographic principle is not fully developed, and we seem to have one example where it works super well, namely, of course, the ADS-CFT correspondence. Now, the question is, how can we generalize this? How can we get away from ADS? In particular, the thing I'm most interested in is, can we get to asymptotically flat spacetimes? And so in this talk, I want to focus on one little detail of the ADS that I think is a feature of the ADS-CFT correspondence, namely that we have two spaces of different dimension that have the same symmetry group. So this means that both in gravity and in its holographic dual, the same symmetries are geometrically realized. I mean, one way to formulate this is to say that we have two homogeneous spaces for the same symmetry group, in this case, the ADS group. And these spaces have different dimension. Okay, so this is a very basic question. So I'll call this kind of zeroth order ADS-CFT a bit later in the talk. It might be a stupid name because the ADS-CFT correspondence is much, much more. But the question I want to ask is, so what is the corresponding situation for flat space? What are the homogeneous spaces of the Poincaré group? So on which other spaces could be considered to have holographic duals or duals to gravity in asymptotically flat spacetimes, if we take this point here as a feature of the ADS-CFT correspondence. Okay, so this is the outline of my talk. I start with, so this will be the first part, homogeneous spaces of the Poincaré group. And I will go through various spaces, and then we see that there's a nice way to understand them also with very basic geometric terms in a higher dimensional space. We can, all of these spaces we find, we can put in a higher dimensional space. And then in the very end, the last 5-10 minutes is this work in progress that tells us what we could be doing with this embedding space picture. Okay, so let's start, let's review this, as I said, basic feature of the ADS-CFT correspondence in the terms that I'll be using in this talk. So ADS-4 is a homogeneous space. We have SO3,2. This is, of course, the ADS group. And then we choose a six-dimensional subgroup of the ADS group. And in this, and of course, we choose SO3,1, the Lorentz group, which tells us this is the group now that keeps points invariant, which means that on a tangent, so that we have locally Lorentz symmetry. On an infinitesimal level, we can also just describe this using this pair of algebras. Just a sanity check, this is a 10-dimensional group, this is a 6-dimensional group, so we get a 4-dimensional spacetime. Okay, now you can ask the question, just giving this group theory, just giving these groups, can we construct some some invariant tensor fields. I don't want to say low dimensional here, but some two tensors or one tensors or whatever SL3.1 tensor fields that live on ADS4 that are invariant? And the answer is, of course, yes. As you know, the metric is an invariant. I mean, the metric or co-metric is a symmetric invariant 2 tensor. And this metric has constant negative curvature. And we can look at the symmetries of this invariant. We can look at the symmetries of this invariant structure, the Lie derivatives of this metric that we just found. And indeed, we find SO3.2. So this is kind of the inverse picture that you usually have. Usually, we start with the metric, and then we determine the symmetries. Here, it goes the other way around. OK, so now let's entertain this idea of we're looking now for a three-dimensional space that has the same symmetries as ADS4. So in particular, we look at a seven-dimensional subalgebra of SO3.2. Now, these are classified. That's very nice. So we open this old paper by Patera, Sharp, Winternitz, and Sassenhaus. And you see that there are actually only two choices. There are two seven-dimensional subalgebras. One of them I've written here. And indeed, this homogeneous space gives rise to what we can call a conformal compact Minkowski space. So there is no really invariant structure, but there's a conformally invariant metric defined on it. And indeed, we can, and if we look at the symmetries that leave this structure invariant up to rescalings, we find again SO3.2, so the conformal symmetries of Minkowski space in three dimensions. OK. Now, so this was this basic picture of ADS-CFT that I want to now generalize to Minkowski space. So let's do the same thing for the Poincaré group. So we have 4D Minkowski space, which we can think of as the Klein pair, ISO3.1 by the Lorentz algebra. There's, of course, the invariant structure that we have is a flat metric. And the symmetries of this invariant structure give us, again, the Lorentz, the Poincaré algebra. So far, nothing new. But then again, so now we look, I want to play the same game as I did before. I look at all possible seven-dimensional subalgebras of ISO3.1. And it turns out there's exactly one under a condition that I'll explain in a minute. There's exactly one, there's a unique choice, has this form. And the space it gives rise to has not a conformal, doesn't have a metric, but it has a Carolian structure. Just as a reminder, Carolian structure is a degenerate metric with a vector lying in this degenerate, in the kernel of this degenerate metric. So in fact, it has less than a Carolian structure, it has a conformal Carolian structure. And then we can look at this again as before, as the symmetries leaving the structure invariant, and we find the BMS group. And the space, as you might have guessed, is, of course, Scry. So in some sense, Scry is really like the preferred, from this point of view, you could say it's a preferred holographic screen for Minkowski space, in the sense that it's a three-dimensional space on which all of the symmetries, ISO3.1, are geometrically realized. So just regarding this caveat, I said here for an effective action, there are other seven-dimensional subalgebras of the Poincaré algebra, but in these cases, some of the generators don't act effectively. So the translations, for instance, don't act effectively. But it, yeah, if you want to have all of them acting effectively, then this is the unique choice. Okay. Good, so far. So we just, without imposing any boundary conditions, not knowing anything about Penrose compactification, we reconstructed Scry as a possible holographic screen for gravity in asymptotically flat spacetimes. Now, we have all of these other corners. I mean, so this is the way to, I mean, this will be my mentioning of corners in this talk. These other corners of the Penrose diagram. So we also would expect to find them somewhere. Yeah, so Schette.
Ready?
Look, I don't hear the. Can you go back to the previous slide?
Yes.
So you get a much bigger group in the on Scry class, right?
Sorry.
So if you're trying to make a comparison with the ADS-CFT case,
yeah.
Here you get two different groups for for Dimenkovsky and Scribe Plus.
You mean the symmetries of this?
The symmetries, sorry.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's yeah.
So are you, I mean
I mean the so we should probably differentiate between the homogeneous space, the symmetries of the homogeneous space, and the symmetries of the invariant structure that we have on the homogeneous space.
Okay, so
I think it's a bit similar to we have the same thing in three-dimensional ADS, I would say, in ADS 3. Okay, so yeah, as I said, if we want to have all of the symmetries acting, then we cannot find these spaces. So these are we won't find them as three-dimensional homogeneous spaces of the Poincaré group. Okay. Yeah, I might comment on this later. So that means that let's go one dimension higher and look at four-dimensional homogeneous spaces of the Poincaré group. So again, we open our paper of Patera and al. And look for all six-dimensional subalgebras of ISO 3.1. Again, this is very nice because I mean this is just group theory. We don't have to think a lot here. And so you find one space. So ISO 2.1 is a subalgebra of ISO 3.1, obviously. And the space we find has a pseudo-Carolian structure. It's a four-dimensional space. UAB is a Lorentzian metric with positive curvature, a degenerate metric, so it has one degenerate direction, where this NA lives in. The vector lives in the kernel of this degenerate direction, and the kernel of the metric. And if we look at the symmetries living this structure invariant, we find again an infinite dimensional symmetry group, SO 3.1 times functions living on this space with positive curvature, this three-dimensional space. Now, what is this? Turns out that if you go back to the paper by Ashtekar and Hansen, where they discuss asymptotically flatness at spatial and null infinity, that this is just the blow up of spatial infinity. So spatial infinity, as you know, is a degenerate, is a singular point in the compactification. But what these, what Ashtekar and Hansen considered then is to blow up this point to exactly this four-dimensional space time in order to better work with it. And so I should mention that Gibbons was the first one to suggest that this might also be a Carolian space time.
I mean, by pseudo-Carolian is that, so QAB now is Lorentzian and QN is zero, or not?
QAB is Lorentzian, right? And there's a degenerate direction.
Okay, Q band. Contracted with
Q N. Dot N is zero, yeah, okay. Exactly.
You know that you mean that Q is null, that's the point.
Yeah. Okay, so we found SPI there. We found this blob of SPI again without knowing, so if you look at this paper by Ashtekar and Hansen, it's a bit complicated the way they define it, but here we just looked at groups and algebras. Yeah.
Hey.
Hey.
Is there a geometrical way to see why this time the killing fields are real killing fields and not conformal killing fields? Is there because in the case of Sky they were conformal killing fields?
Right. So here. I mean, we case of Scribe, we found the structure we found was not was a conformal structure. So actually, if I write it this way, it's a bit wrong. I should write it, there's a conformal class of these pairs that we find. And we look for all the transformations that leave this conformal class invariant. Here we really find a pair, and we look for all the transformations that leave this pair exactly invariant, and then we find this infinite dimensional group.
It's funny because you would think that
you mean that like
as I zero is defined also conformally? Yeah. I don't know. I would have thought it would be the same thing then for Scribe.
Yeah. So the construction they do in this paper is not one way to understand this pair is really using this Penrose compactification, where you have this freedom of acting with a conformal factor that doesn't vanish at the boundary. The way they define the structure here is a bit different. I mean, it's not a conformal compactification, so
I see.
Maybe we shouldn't expect it. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I0 does not appear in the conformal compactification.
Yeah.
The point. So. Yeah. Maybe. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Maybe. I'm not sure whether I really properly answered your question, but okay. Okay, but so we found this spy. Now it's not so surprising that we also find time-like infinity. Again, time-like infinity in contrast to this guy here, it's not Lorentzian, but it's a Euclidean degenerate metric with negative curvature. It's kind of hyperbolic space. And again, we have an infinite dimensional symmetries. Then there's another guy that I think hasn't appeared in literature before that we also found that naturally pairs with these guys here. We called it Nye. And it has something like a doubly Carolian structure. So this is a metric that has two degenerate directions with two vectors. And you can look at the exact symmetries now, not the conformal symmetries, as before, the exact symmetries. And the exact symmetries of this guy give you, again, BMS. So you can think of this space as kind of unrolling the conformal direction that you had in BMS. So you can also call it, it's also sometimes called the bundle of scales. You can call it the bundle of scales of Scry. So this is kind of neat. Okay, so this is the basically big picture summarizing. So we found all of these homogeneous, all of these points of the compactification of Minkowski space as homogeneous spaces of the Poincaré group. And particularly, we also found this Nye, this null infinity. This is the bundle of scales of Scry. If we forget about the scale, we get back to Scry. And here's also a nice picture summarizing this. I should mention that there are more homogeneous spaces of the Poincaré group in four dimensions. More four-dimensional spaces of the Poincaré group. But, I mean, it might be interesting to explore them. They don't seem to have a place in this diagram. Okay, I have 15 minutes more, right? Or maybe 10, 15 with discussion. Okay, good. Okay, so this was the end of the first part of my talk. So this picture we get is probably not mind-blowingly surprising, but it's kind of neat that, again, without knowing anything about compactification, boundary conditions, we can get all of these spaces. Okay, so, but there's a nice geometric way, another geometric way to think about these spaces, namely in terms of some kind of embedding space picture. And this is, it works along the line of Penrose-Rindler, but now for the others, including other spaces as well. Okay, so we take a six-dimensional space, R4,2, that has a metric like this. So with these are two null coordinates, and here there's a minus sign somewhere here. This is the Minkowski metric. This is just some choice of coordinates on this space. And then we consider quadrics. Let's consider quadrics on this space. So just like this, and depending on the sign of epsilon, we get either some kind of De Sitter space, but like a pseudo De Sitter space with a weird signature, we get ADS5. This is the usual construction of ADS5 in this embedding space. Or we get this light cone, generalized light cone, all of which are preserved by SO4,2 just by construction. But now we don't want to have SO4,2, we want to have Poincaré. So what we do is we just introduce some null surface and we start cutting all of these quadrics by this null surface that we have. So let's choose some null surface where I set x minus. So this was, again, just a reminder, this was one of this light-like, this null directions to be a constant, and then consider the cuts. And for all choices where this guy does not go through the origin, I get a bunch of Minkowski space. So if I cut any of these quadrics with these null surface, I get Minkowski space. So there are a lot of Minkowski spaces in this six-dimensional space. But then there are a couple of, then we also find all of these other spaces there, namely if we start cutting with this null surface that goes through the origin. So for instance, if we cut this quadric with the positive curvature with this null surface, we get spy. This is just a neat way to parameterize this. So we have, again, these coordinates. You see we set this one to 0 because we're cutting it with the x minus equals 0. And then x squared has to live on some 3D De Sitter space. X has to live on a 3D De Sitter space. But we also get Tie, and we also get this Nye space, where here, actually, we get two copies of this, depending on whether this is the forward null cone or the future directed light cone or the past directed light cone. And then this is now the usual construction by Penrose and Rindler. We can, if we forget about the scales here, if we identify points here that just differ by a factor, this is just scry. This is the usual construction that you can find in Penrose and Rindler. But now again, we also find all of these other spaces, all of these other boundaries of Minkowski space, all of them live in the six-dimensional embedding space. And this is kind of neat. Indeed, you can show that all orbits of the Poincaré group in the six-dimensional space belong to one of these, are either Spy, Tai, Nai, or Minkowski space. Okay. Just a brief thing. Maybe I skip this. Since we have Minkowski space and all of these other spaces here in the same six-dimensional space, there's a way to relate points of Minkowski space to cuts of this other space in a kind of twist-oriented way. But just skip this. Okay, that ends these first two parts of my talk. This is kind of the end of the responsible part of my talk. And now let's talk about something a bit more adventurous. So this is work in progress. Now I showed you this embedding space. Now you might wonder that's a nice construction, but it's some concrete application that we can do with this. And I think, yes, there is something we might be doing with it. And I think it might help us to understand Carolian CFTs. So we heard a lot about Carolian CFTs in the past days. Just one slide. So there's a field theory that lives on a conformal Carolian background. Conformal Carolian symmetries are, of course, the same as BMS symmetries, as we've heard already a lot of times. And we expect these conformal Carolian correlators to be to be the same thing as scattering amplitudes in asymptotically fed spacetimes using some map that still has to be figured out. But I hope people here in this audience are currently very much trying to figure this out. So now why do I think that this embedding space picture might be useful for this? Notice that this embedding space is just the embedding space for 4D CFTs. I mean, this is almost textbook material. So just a quick reminder, what is the idea here? We have, if we want to write down correlators for four-dimensional CFTs, we can start by considering fields in the six-dimensional space that live on this null cone and are homogeneous of degree delta. And then all the correlators have to be written in terms of products, of inner products of these points, just due to, I mean, that's the only symmetry invariant thing that you can write down. So for instance, the two-point correlator, we know it has to be of that form. And then if we want to get back again to the field in physical space, what we do is just we take this null cone and cut it again with one of these null surfaces. Usually the null surface chosen is something like this, so this in my notation this would be N1. And then the field pulled back to this null surface gives us, so the correlator pulled back to this null surface gives us the correlator in physical space. This also works, of course, for spinning fields. Okay, and now the idea is very simple. Let's just use a different cut of Q0. So let's cut it with this null surface N0. So this is a point of that form, belongs to this this section, belongs to both Q0 and N0. Now we can, if we forget about scales, we can write it in this form. And then products of this of points of this form will always take this form, whereby Z12, I mean Z1 minus Z2, and then the conjugates. So for the two-point correlator in this case, this is again the two-point correlator we would have in the embedding space picture, and then if we just use points of that form, what we get is something like this. And this resonates very much with what Gerben told us the other day, that for this very concrete current scalar field that he constructed, these correlators that depend, that are only spatial correlators, are always solutions. More generally, we could consider taking any 4D CFD correlator written in this embedding space coordinates. Do you have a question, Laurent?
Why does the U dependence drops out? Like,
okay,
are you taking U1 equal U2, or?
So the U dependence drops out because if I've, the metric is diagonal in these two, this is X plus and X minus. So what I have is Q1 dot Q2, and then U1 times zero minus plus U2 times zero. So the U dependence in this way drops out completely, but there's a second slide. So take any 4D CFT correlator written in the embedding space picture, and if we just apply this map, we get some correlator that we that depends only on Z bars, Z and Z bar, and we can think of this as being a correlator for a Carolian CFT. So this is kind of nice, but as Laurent mentioned, it's a bit boring that the U dependence drops out completely. And indeed, from Gerben's talk, we would also expect to be that there's another branch where there is U dependence. And I think, so one way to do this is we should remember that these are correlators in Lorentzian signature. So we should include some I epsilon prescription here. Mm. And the I epsilon, there are probably many ways to do it, but one way we found is to have something like this. I didn't write it down completely because it would fit on the slide, but it's a bit messy. So that the inner product now looks something like this. Okay, and again, I think this should apply to if we have some correlator for 4D CFT, and for all the scalar products, we plug in something like this, we might be able to get a Carolian correlator. But let's just apply this for a very simple case, namely for the two-point correlator, where we get something like this. So you see, we have Z1 dots, the same thing as before, then this plus I epsilon prescription that contains that knows about the U dependence. And epsilon to one is bigger than zero, which means that we're considering the correlator in this particular form, in this particular order ring. So if we take the limit epsilon to zero, we can either go back to all the correlators we had before, or for a very specific choice of delta, I mean for delta equals one, we get a bunch of delta functions here. And this is also what Gerben told us the other day. However, in fact, this part here still, I think, is still divergent. So what in this particular case, what we should rather consider is what is better defined is the commutator, where we get this sine u2 minus u1 and then two delta functions. And actually, in a paper that appeared only 2 days ago, Liu and Long, they showed that there's also kind of a bulk way to reconstruct this commutator. But again, I believe that we can apply this prescription more generally to reproduce Carolian CFT correlators, in particular three-point functions and maybe higher-point functions. Okay, these are my conclusions, but maybe I'll just stop here and take questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We have time for questions. Of course, you already have the cube.
Everybody tired.
Yeah, just about these two branches, because it's true. So you have one branch where the two-point function, even delta equal one, you could also put one over z minus z12 square, right? Or these delta function ones. And so are you saying somehow, I don't know, we need to consider both at once, or we have to pick, is there a consistent way to pick a branch? Where are you going? Where do you think it's going?
I would expect from what we know about celestial CFTs, for instance, that there in the low point functions, we always have these delta functions. And in particular, also, I think here 3-point functions would be zero. Unless you go to a different signature.
Okay, so sorry. So what you're saying is when people talk about CFT, they always throw away all the contact
yes,
terms.
Yes, yeah, Right.
And then they have no control above it. So you're saying in some sense the Carolian structure is the one that controls this contact term that usually are completely ignored. Okay.
Yeah, okay, maybe that's a way to view it. But I believe that these contact terms are important for...
I do. Yeah. It's always something, you know, puzzling about CFT that people throw all these contact terms away. Yeah, okay.
But
that's interesting.
All right. I guess we can thank Jakob again.
Okay, thank you.